finding little bits of purpose or ways to create purpose through a hardship is really helpful.
What's up, everyone? You're listening to the Do Hard Things podcast by Elite SRS. The purpose of this show is to share stories of hardship and victory as an encouragement for those in the middle of their own hard thing. Because we know hardship produces perseverance, which produces character, which ultimately produces hope. Today's guest is Amy Jane David. Amy is an outdoor adventure guide and content creator, spending her time big mountain skiing, guiding backpacking trips, and creating content for both outdoor films and brands. Amy shares about the tragic death of her boyfriend Matt in a cliff jumping accident, and her own near-death experience the same year, and how those two experiences amplified her gratitude for life. If you enjoy the show, please don't forget to subscribe and leave a review so more people can be encouraged by the stories we share. Now, here's the conversation with Amy Jane David. All right, we've got Amy Jane David on the Do Hard Things podcast. So excited to have you. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. I think your story will be fun for us to kind of discover together and hopefully be encouraging. But before we do that, I'd like to give people a context for who you are, and maybe they've heard of you and know, but I'd imagine there's somebody out there who doesn't. So the question I like to ask is, when people ask you what you do, how do you answer it?
That's a great question, actually. I do a lot of different things. So I've been trying to figure out good ways to sum it up.
Yeah.
Overall, I am a professional skier, and that's my main occupation and way I spend my time in the winter. And in the summertime, I mostly am a backpacking guide, spending multiple days on end out in the mountains, leading people out there. And so in addition to that, in the winter, I'm also a snowmobiler, and I create media content for different companies through my sponsorships, if that's writing, video, photo. And most recently, I've started working with larger scale production companies like Teton Gravity Research to do ski action and tell stories through film, all wow. using like outdoor adventure as the main thread.
Okay. That was a lot of things. No wonder you're trying to like sort through like all the different balls you have that you're juggling. So what was the like one that was, it sounds like they're all kind of built on top of each other a little bit. Like there's definitely connections, but what was the like the OG original thing you were doing of those that kind of started it all? Was it skiing?
Yeah, it's always been skiing. That's my biggest passion in life. And so throughout all of my pursuits, it's been looking towards becoming a professional skier. And if you took the profession out of it, I would just be looking to spend my time in the mountains skiing, you know, just as the thing I like to do and spend my time doing. So skiing has always been like the core driver. And then stemming out from that, I've found different ways to make an income using that as my skill set. And then, you know, when you blend all the different seasons together, I guess outdoor adventure athlete and content creator would be a good like umbrella of all the things that I do.
Yeah. So had it always been your goal to be a skier, or like did that come around when you're in high school? What was the origin of that pursuit?
Yeah. So I grew up in Pinedale, Wyoming, which is a small town just south of Jackson Hole. And my parents, actually my dad's side of the family homesteaded there. So I've been there for years and years, very much in the outdoors, and same with my mom's family, just being really big into skiing. And so I learned at a very young age how to ski, and it was just what we did for fun in the winter. And I, especially out of everyone in my family, have like really latched onto that as something I'm a little bit obsessed with. And so I grew up in high, all the way through high school, ski racing, and then I did some freestyle competitions as a kid. And we had a tiny little ski resort. It's called White Pine out of Pinedale. Okay. It's right at the foothills of the Wind River Mountains. And that ski resort is a little bit flatter, very small. So you don't really develop, say, big mountain skiing skills at that resort, but it developed a love of the mountains and being in the outdoors. So the first time I saw a Teton Gravity Research film, and for anyone who hasn't seen those, I would highly recommend checking it out. It's just really cool to see human potential and beautiful landscapes. And when I saw one of those films when I was a teenager, I realized like the type of skiing that you can do and the places that you can go. And that's what really inspired me to want to pursue skiing for, you know, at a bigger, higher level.
Okay.
So then it was
mostly now you're doing that. You said you're helping create those. So this is like a full circle moment for you in a way to like mm-hmm. be inspired by Teton Gravity. Do you say TJR?
Yeah,
TGR.
Yeah, my PR background. I went to school and got communications degree, and so I did some PR. And so they always train us to say like, say the full name and then the abbreviation. So I think that's
like
that training coming in. But yeah, TGR. Yeah.
Okay.
Is the easiest way to say it.
So now you get to help inspire somebody else. Is that the kind of the goal?
Yeah, exactly. So this last winter, winter of 2022. I was invited to go and be one of the athletes in front of the camera for one of the segments in their newest film called Magic Hour. And my segment is based in Montana, and we're skiing and using snowmobiles to access the ski terrain. And yeah, it was really, really cool to have that like dream come true full circle moment.
Yeah.
So hopefully that will be inspiring other people to see themselves, you know, maybe younger girls can see me in that position and realize that they are also capable of doing that.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So fun. So you said backpacking, which is like my true love, minus my wife. And I want to know, like, because all your life, you know, you kind of umbrellaed it as this like outdoor adventure content creator person, mm-hmm. which I think, I don't know the percentage of people that would say this is what they want to do, but there are probably a lot more people who say, oh, I'd love to do that than actually end up doing it. But I think what I'm curious about, because there are so many people that would say they like that idea, like what about being outdoors is motivating to you or like makes you passionate about it, because you've created your whole life around, you know, the outdoors, not just skiing, but like being outside in nature.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad you asked that. And I love that you also are passionate about backpacking.
It's the best. Yeah.
I remember the first time I went backpacking, I was so baffled. I was like, this is so hard. My body hurts and we're going so slow. And after that first trip of having those like really frustrated feelings, I started to fall in love with it. Like every single trip that I took after that. Really loved the challenge and how just being on your feet with the things you need on your back, you can go to some really incredible places that you wouldn't be able to experience otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And I think backpacking is one of the best, outdoor adventure sports to really connect with the root of why I love the outdoors and why I've made my life to be built around spending time in the outdoors. And ideally getting other people to have that opportunity as well. So for my career, it's like two motivations. One is for myself, you know, for my own internal well-being. And then also I have this desire to help other people and create those opportunities for them. And so that's where the guiding part comes in really handy.
Mm-hmm.
I guess to get to more of the specific question that you asked of like, what's the motivation? And it's pretty, I mean, simple yet complex in the sense of, you know, what being in the outdoors does for our internal state as human beings, you know, the mental side of it where you're, you know, chemically actually receiving a lot of, or maybe it's stimulating a lot of different chemical reactions in the brain. So you're getting serotonin, dopamine, and if you're being physical, like endorphins. So chemically, it's really good for your happiness level and just internal well-being. And then physically, you know, you're moving your body. And so there's lots of obvious benefits to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the whole mental health side of things for me has been just really important. I've gone through some really challenging things in my life, and I've always gone to the outdoors as my place of like refuge and healing. And so finding a way to create a lifestyle where that's something that's constant in my personal life has been really important to me.
Yeah. And you're doing all of this. It is super fun.
I think having fun is really important also, you know,
like, caveat.
Yeah. Caveat. Fun is important.
Yeah, totally. It's not all just like grin and bear it, do hard things. You want to enjoy it a little bit. And you're doing all this in Idaho?
Yeah, mostly. So I live in Idaho now. And when I started backpacking and guiding, and also where my ski career really took off, was when I moved to Salt Lake City for college. I went to college at Westminster and studied the psychology of communication with a minor in outdoor education and leadership. Yeah. So those all like really fit together with what I'm doing now. Mm-hmm. And that's where I learned to backpack, was in those outdoor education courses.
Okay, so you're a little bit older getting into the backpacking scene.
Yeah, so I started in the mountains as a tiny kid with my parents horsepacking in the Wind River Mountains. And that also is really a big influencer on my love of being outdoors. But we didn't backpack, really. We went hiking, but horsepacking was the main mode of transportation when I was a tiny kid.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I was in probably 19 or 20 when I first went backpacking. And that was in the southern Utah desert.
Like Bryce Canyon, Zion, that area?
Yeah, we were at the San Rafael Swell, I think permit-wise for an education course, but it's similar to that. And I have spent a lot of time at Zion and Bryce. Here goes a slight tangent, but it's related. So, and this does tie back to skiing, but like I feel like my backpacking really targets the reason I love the outdoors on like a larger scale than just the enjoyment of skiing too.
Yeah.
So after college, I started a women's retreat program for backpacking in particular. So we would invite women from all different ages and backgrounds all across the country. Really anyone around the world was invited.
Yeah.
And there were 10 spots for each trip that were available. And we would go to, it started, where did it start? In the Wind River Mountains, where, you know, where I grew up. And then we also started adding them in Escalante down in southern Utah, and had to do a Bryce trip once based on a flash flood situation in Escalante. Bryce had higher elevation and all the water runs down instead of in. So that was handy. and then I also started adding them to the Sawtooths in Idaho, where I live now. So mainly it was like the main places I wanted to go and enjoyed being at, where we would take those trips.
Yeah.
And on those trips, the goal was to create like a space of community and like-minded people who are seeking adventure and that sense of community. And we would teach the skills so that the women could then, the goal is they'd be self-sufficient and be able to go and do that themselves. And then also have like, more of deeper conversations and reflection in the evening. And it was a space of non-judgment, ideally, is what we were trying to create on that atmosphere. So throughout the entire day, there's like open conversations happening, but something a little more intentional each evening.
Yeah.
So that was really special for me. I haven't done those since COVID, and I'd like to get back into it.
I was going to ask you, because you said you were doing it. I was going to ask if it was done, or so it sounds like you're on pause.
Yeah, on pause. And I think this coming summer, I'm going to get some started again. Okay. I've done a couple of ski retreat versions of that the last two winters.
Cool. Do you have the same people coming back, or is it usually a whole different group of women?
There's a few people that have come back each year, but primarily it's different people.
Okay. Wow. You probably have gotten to meet some really exciting, interesting people doing that and spending a lot of time, right? It's not like you're just at a baseball game with somebody. Like you're forced to talk to people when you're in the mountains, you know?
So, yeah, exactly. I call it kind of challenge by choice. So
I like it.
You can be as open and vulnerable as you want to be. There's a space for it, but some people sign up for those trips and they're just looking for adventure. Like they just want to go out in the mountains and and explore something new with people that are also looking for that. And then there's people who are looking for, like, say, emotional refuge. And and those, I think those moments when I've had those deep connections with women who are really going through something hard in their life, and they chose to go on this trip as a healing experience, those have been really meaningful for me.
Yeah.
I think when I started, the year I started doing these retreats was less than a year after I had experienced the death of my boyfriend. And that was really, really tough time for me. And there were other challenges compounded and layered on top of that, that were just like, it was just really hard. And I found that having a community of women in particular for me at that time was really, really valuable. And so creating that space for other people is something I thought was helpful, but I realize now, like, it was, well, I knew it then that it was really important for me as well.
You know,
like, they, all of the people on these trips really helped me a lot going through that, something that was so raw and fresh.
Yeah, no kidding. In this episode, Amy and I get into jump rope talk a bit, and she shares how jump rope training has benefited her as a professional skier. If you want to be inspired to jump rope, be sure to join our Jumpstart 90 program, and you'll receive coaching, homework, community, and accountability to help make jump rope a part of your lifestyle for years to come. Head to elitesrs.com/js90 for more information. So I'm just going to ask, because you brought it up, but do you feel, how much, people have a lot of different responses to hardship, right? Like, some people will try to fill the gap with something to occupy their mind and their, like, time. And some people will run, like, curl up in a ball and just, like, wish that nothing existed. And then there's everything in between on the spectrum. And I'm wondering, you know, when your boyfriend passed away, was it like, did this get birthed out of that in a way, or because you were trying to fill the gap, or was it, I need some way to process this and I see the need in people around me? Like, maybe it wasn't even attached. I'm just kind of curious if it was a response to that, or just you were able to benefit from it afterwards.
Yeah, this is a great question. And I think it's a combination of the different things you just described. Like, when, you know, the retreats aside, when he passed away, I was able to process it in all of the different ways, you know, from curling up in a ball and crying more than I ever knew a person could cry, and, like, feel like deep devastation and sorrow alone in my apartment that I was living in Salt Lake City alone at the time. To the thing that so I wanted to create, like, for myself, I tried to allow that pain and tried to allow, like, those moments of sadness and, like, honor that, which it wasn't really, to be blunt, it really sucked.
It sounds like it would suck. Yeah.
Yeah, it sucks really bad. And I feel for anyone who's going through something like that. That was the first time I had lost anybody that I loved. Like, I just had no idea how horrible and painful that experience can be. Mm. And one thing that I found really helped me was spending time outdoors and creating new experiences for myself. So, like, my memories would, like, spin out and I would replay a lot of, you know, the good memories, but then also bad memories. And so by going and doing new things, it helped me create, like, yeah, new fresh experiences in my mind. And so that was something helpful for me. And I am a bit of an adrenaline junkie. So
really,
yeah, surprise. So I personally turned to a lot of, probably in that first year after he passed away, it was probably not so healthy, tactics of, like, pushing myself skiing a little bit beyond what I should be doing based on my skill at that time. You know, and it should be a little more incremental and strategic. I was just, like, going super fast and hucking off big cliffs, which I still do today, but a lot more calculated.
Yeah. That's probably wise. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so creating the retreats, I think, was probably born through a combination of all of that. You know, my love of the outdoors, this challenge I was going through, and then hoping to help other people and create something that way.
I think yeah.
It was a combination of it all.
Can I ask how he passed away?
Yeah, I was not there. It was cliff jumping at Causey Reservoir in Utah, into the water in the summertime. And he was a really talented skier and just action sports athlete overall, and really good at doing tricks in the air. And unfortunately, I think they pushed it a little too high, and he just never came back up out of the water.
So he didn't like hit anything in the water. He just landed the wrong way or something.
Yeah. Just that impact, which I've done some cliff jumping and landed like kind of sideways and had like bruises on my stomach before. So I can only imagine. So that was just a terrible day for a lot of people. And he was a really loved person by the whole community in the Salt Lake area and beyond. Yeah. Just one of those people, you know, that was everyone's friend. There were no acquaintances.
Mm-hmm.
Like, once you meet him, you feel like you're like buddies.
He didn't say hi to you. He gave you a hug.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There was no like awkwardness. It was like you're coming in for a hug and you felt like you were loved and special.
Mm. So you weren't there when that happened?
I was not. But I could just sense that something was wrong and
really
was texting and asking if everything was okay. And, you know, no responses. It was not great.
No.
I guess a sort of transition is like thinking of myself going through that really hard experience. One of my favorite memories, unfortunately, it became a favorite memory because it was someone else's hardship, is why I say unfortunately, but why it felt like it was important. One of the trips that I led, a backpacking women's trip in the Wind River Mountains, there was a girl on the trip who almost drove away on the first day before we did all of our group intros because she was not sure she could pull it off. And then we learned that she had just lost her fiance in Afghanistan a year prior, exactly on the day that the trip started. And the trip is what she chose to do to honor him and to prove to herself this was, and it's interesting, this is your podcast name too, because her slogan the whole time was, I can do hard things. And so on the first day hiking in, we stopped for lunch and I noticed that she was having kind of a private moment farther away from the group. So I went over to check in and we were talking about, we were just talking about stuff. And we looked up and there was a bald eagle that flew straight down the meadow right over her head. And she looked at me and she's like, okay, I think I can do this. I think that was my fiance telling me that I can do hard things and it's going to be okay. And I'm like a sucker for symbolism and seeing little moments like that and like finding hope and meaning in them. And so throughout that entire trip, just watching like just the way that she carried herself kind of shift, because backpacking is really hard. Literally it's very hard. And then figuratively, like overcoming that is really amazing. And I think it does a lot for, you know, your human spirit and
totally.
No, realizing so it had been several years since my boyfriend had passed away when she came on that trip. And while I would never wish hardship on anyone, just being able to connect with other people and help them, you know, after you've grown and learned from it is pretty special to be able to do that and find like little silver linings through that.
Well, it's like redeeming it a little bit, right? Like you get a chance to take something that was seemingly broken and wrong and like what's the purpose in this and like use it for good. And like you don't assume that that's going to be the case often, like, and especially if, you know, it's been a few years. Like I think there's a lot of us, we go, why, And you're like, why is this happening to me? And we, most of the time we direct those questions at like God. We're like, God, why? You know? And it's just like the natural response. Like we just want to understand purpose in things. Mm-hmm. And when you get a chance to assign some purpose to something, that's like so refreshing and life-giving.
Right.
So it's pretty cool. You got to do that.
Yeah, I think you're right. Finding little bits of purpose or ways to create purpose through a hardship is really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need it. Like mm-hmm. we definitely need it. I mean, it's like the whole concept of you're on a journey. It's like, well, where you, if you're on a journey, you're going somewhere. And so right. like nobody's interested in just wandering around aimlessly. And so like when your journey gets thrown off course, you're like, well, where am I going now? You know? And so right. you want to understand it. So, I mean, it's kind of a good transition time, I guess. It may have been your answer to the question, but I'm going to ask it anyways, just in case. You know, the central question of the podcast is, what's the hardest thing in your life you wouldn't take back? And the purpose of that question being like twofold. One, hard things happen to everybody, whether they're chosen or they just like are put upon you through circumstance. And, but like what came from it, you know, like, why wouldn't you take it back? Because I think, you know, the intention of this is that it encourages people in the middle of their hard season. And it's hard to understand, again, like what we were just talking about, the purpose or the why, like, how is this good for me in it? Because all you can see is the valley, you know, and there's no light in the tunnel, and all those analogies are true in that moment. And so having somebody shine the light from the other side of the tunnel or from the top of the valley is super valuable. So anyways, the question is, Amy, what's the hardest thing in your life you wouldn't take back?
Yeah, that is a really great question. All your questions are good. I've said that multiple times because it's true. Very thoughtful. I think, oh man, the hardest thing is definitely what we were just talking about. Yeah. was the death of Matt.
His can't imagine Matt. It's hard to, it's probably hard to top that kind of a difficult experience.
Yeah. And at first I was going to answer that question by saying, like, this grand multi-sport adventure I just went on this year, that was really hard.
Well, I do want to hear about it now.
And I wouldn't take it back because I'll tell you about it.
Okay.
But I wouldn't take it back because I really enjoyed it. And then when I think of truly the hardest thing I've gone through was, you know, losing Matt, and I would take that back. Like, I wish it had never happened.
Yeah.
The part of that I wouldn't take back is how I've grown as a person through overcoming that challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And to add to the layer of that, within that same year, I had told you that I was kind of coping in a reckless way with my skiing, where I was just going full throttle, trying to get that adrenaline rush. And like, my motto is send it for Heffy, but not in like a great, I wasn't doing it in a very smart way. And in a ski competition in that year, I had a really bad ski crash, and I got launched really far through the air and landed in a pile of rocks. Hold on.
Help me envision this.
Okay.
You said really far through the air. So when right. I'm envisioning really far through the air, I'm envisioning like 100 feet.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like that. I'll have to separately, I'll send you a video or a photo of it.
Okay. And then I'll link it for people that also are visual. Okay.
Yes. So I could describe that a little bit better. So I was in a, and maybe I'll give the reason why. So this was a life-threatening crash where if I was-
It sounds like it was.
One way or the other, I could have also died within that same year that I had lost him. And so coming out of that crash, like my personal growth, realizing how fragile life is and how special it is what I wouldn't take back. The actual incidents that caused that personal growth, I for sure would take back. I'd rather not come through that.
It's like, I would like to learn that another way. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But how, like, it's hard to, like, you can't just learn that you can just read it in a book and be like, yep, download it.
Life is fragile.
Yep. Connected. All those deep things that are hard to even put to words.
Mm-hmm.
So to give you the visual of the ski crash, a big mountain skiing competition is where there's a large, extreme face on a mountain. There's a start gate at the top and then a finish gate at the bottom. And then you choose the way you want to go down. And there's five judges and you get scored on your speed, how smooth your line choice is. And then if you go over cliffs, if you can do tricks and how well you execute all of that.
Yeah.
Basically, like if you watch a ski film, you're trying to ski like that, but in a competition.
Yeah.
And the snow conditions are rarily pristine. So it's really chopped up. This is why I stopped doing those competitions, because I'm going to go ski in the backcountry where it's smooth and I choose my way. And it's, very different than the competition scene. But my line that I chose was a straight line through a little chute. And then my plan was to just hold on to my speed until the finish corral, just kind of let myself slow down eventually, because you'd be going so fast coming out of this chute. However, I didn't see this roll in the terrain. And when I hit that roll, my legs just gave out. And it launched me like a jump about 100 feet down through the air. And this is in Big Sky, Montana. And there's a lot of we call them shark fin rocks, because they're sharp. Like they look like a shark fin. And they're really sharp and pointy and all pointed up at you. Like a dagger, like horror movie.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I landed on my hip on the rocks. And then it continued to tomahawk around. And in the slow motion video, you can see my face goes directly between two rocks as I face planted and my back scorpioned out. And so I was going at least 70 miles an hour.
I was going to ask you how fast you were going.
So watching that video, it made me realize if my face had been to the right or the left, the open part of my helmet, I for sure could have died in that moment. And then I was taken down eventually on a backboard into the ambulance and to the Big Sky Hospital. And I was really lucky from that crash, where I came away with a lot of injuries that, if were slightly worse, would have been life-threatening. So I fractured my pelvis in two places instead of breaking it. And if you break your pelvis displaced, that can sever your femoral artery and you bleed out. And then I had a strain to my C4 of my neck, where if you break your neck at the C4, your heart stops beating. Bruised lungs instead of broken lung or punctured lungs, broken ribs, and then my femur. I have a deep bone bruise, hematoma on it, versus a broken femur. And so, and just one scratch on the face instead of complete destruction.
Rock to the face. Yeah.
Yeah. So, oh,
gosh.
Yeah, really not great. But my recovery from that was pretty quick. It took a couple of months. And I was back skiing pretty aggressively, in a couple of months, which, I don't know. I'm a little bit different mindset perhaps than other people. But so those going through that life threatening crash paired with losing someone that I really loved a lot, was just this wild compound of events.
Mm-hmm.
And overcoming that, the things that I learned from it, I don't know how I could have gained that depth of understanding in a different way.
Yeah. So that's the question I wanted to ask you. When you think back on that year that, you lost Matt, you went through the crash. Do you ever find yourself thinking, one way or the other, my life would look like this if that hadn't happened, and acknowledging the change? And I think the ultimate question is what have you recognized is different in your day-to-day, maybe not day-to-day, but living of life, and where you see it creep in of I think that way because of that year. Or, I said that thing to that person because of that year and the things that came from it. What are some examples of that?
Yeah, I think the first thing that comes to mind is the amount of time I spend in the backcountry and the way I look at the little things in nature. And I've always thought of you know, I've always appreciated the little intricacies of like the beauty of a snowflake or the light on the grass. But now when I see that, I honestly, I have like a deeper spiritual connection, where like I see those sparkles and I feel like it's say Matt shining a light down and giving me this like soulful hug or brightening my day, and just appreciating those really small, beautiful moments. And yeah, just walking out and enjoying like a fresh breath of air. Like the tiniest things bring me a lot of joy. Where say if I was ski touring in the backcountry and I see like, I'm just like kind of before this happened, or I would assume maybe if this didn't happen, I'd have more tunnel vision of like, there's a sick cliff to hit. Here's a big jump. Like, oh, I wish it was better snow so I could ski faster. Like yeah. More of that aggressive, like adrenaline junkie mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because I'm going through that hardship of just appreciating the beauty of the little things in life, now I'm also still seeing those cliffs as like, oh, I want to jump off of that. But also, wow, look how beautiful this snow is. And just, I don't even know how to describe it. Like once you put it to words.
It sounds like you are more grateful.
Yeah, really.
Like you just have a lot of gratitude for things that you didn't before. Mm-hmm. And so you can like have a level of appreciation for, you know, what you're describing. And then like the cliff isn't a means to an end of like getting down the mountain in a certain time or something, but it is in and of itself, like has a purpose. You're like, you're not just like looking at it as I'm going to use and abuse this cliff and move on. You know, it's like, no. Like what can I get from this experience? You know, and it sounds slower and more appreciative. I don't know.
Yeah. I think you're spot on. Definitely gratitude for like the moment and the way that you just described that different approach to looking at things.
Yeah.
And then I think also like a huge amount of gratitude and compassion and empathy for other people, which I've always cared about other people and been a pretty sensitive person my entire life. But having just knowing like the amount of pain that someone could be going through, but still not showing it on the outside, I think has really like hit home for me when I'm interacting with other people. It's like, you don't know what they're going through and what little thing, like rude thing that you say to them could just totally crush their day. Just based on where they're at, because you just never know. Because I was that person too, where I showed up like looking cheerful, like, oh, there she is again, smiling and being nice and going hard on the skis. She must be fine. But you know, I'm still struggling inside with a lot of things. And also just knowing that you could lose someone you love any second. And so just, I get hard on myself for not being better at this, but I want to, and I try to put an effort into making sure the people that I love know, like, it's so cliche, but it's true. It's like, it's really important that you let people know, like what they mean to you.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. It's easy to take them for granted. It's easy to take like the situations that we have for granted. What, so when you are now interacting with people and, you know, you're not sure, you know, where they're at, like, because that is, I think that's a reality a lot of us live in. And some of us recognize like, oh, I don't know their story, more often than others. Like that's true. Like, and I think it sounds like you now are a different version of yourself where you recognize you don't know their story more often than you used to. So like, what are some good questions or ways that you can interact to like kind of put the assumptions aside and meet people where they're at? And maybe you can answer that from your own experience, but like, how do you get to a place where you can know somebody and where they're really at? Because it's like, you can only do so much, but like, what tips do you have for that type of relationship?
Great. That's definitely something that I'm still learning and trying to understand as well and do better, especially with my, like the guiding side of my profession.
You got to do it all the time, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, it's easier to keep it surface level and just not, you know, be nice and pleasant and not be like prodding too hard. I think that's the easy route. But then if you are trying to have a deeper understanding of someone, you know, I mean, asking how people are is a good start. Mm-hmm. I think getting an honest answer can be a hard thing.
Yeah, it's out of your control a little bit.
Right. And I think just having like the right, if you're trying to have like a deeper conversation with somebody, I think like finding an appropriate time and place will make a big difference on the type of answer that you get and the level of conversation that you can have. Mm-hmm. You know, just in passing, people, I think in general, people don't want to be a burden.
Yeah.
You know? So I think a lot of people keep things bottled up inside because they don't want to put that onto somebody else or be seen as someone who's struggling. And that's just an assumption of like people as like, as a whole. So trying to, you know, if you're trying to be a support system for someone, you know, going out of your way to create a time and place, like asking them to go do something fun, like let's go for a hike, let's go for a walk at the park. And then that's more of a private space to be like, so how are you really doing?
Right. You know, right.
Without, yeah. Not in a condescending way too, you know. I think they would know that, right? Right.
I think if you made the time. Yeah. Cause I love what you said, right? Like it's cause what you're saying is that it takes time. Cause you know, I think we want it to be quick. Like I just did this literally today. We have a staff meeting every morning and one of our staff, I was like, hey, how are you? She said, oh, I'm fine. Which you know, when people answer the question, you can like kind of tell if there's like something behind it. And, you know, I go, just fine. And she answers it, but I didn't have enough time to like sit with it, you know? And it's like, if I had had time, then I probably could have gotten more into the like, well, why are you just fine? You know, but like, there's not enough time. And I guess like the onus would be on me at that point to go out to where she is and say, hey, I didn't get to finish that conversation. Like, what's actually going on? And like, that's what you're describing, right? Is like, you have to set aside the time. Right. And I'm wondering for yourself, like in that year, did people do that for you? Like, do you remember people that like made the time?
Yeah, absolutely. I had a really great support system during that first year. Like my parents came out and stayed with me. My mom stayed with me for a couple of weeks. My dad came out initially and then had to go back to work. So I had them like physically, like my mom slept in my bed with me. And I would be like, mom, I need you to drive me to the top of this, like to the top of this canyon, and I'm going to bike down. And I'm sure that made her pretty uncomfortable, you know, watching her daughter who was just traumatized, you know, bomb down a hill on her road bike and she's driving behind. But yeah, she did that because I was like, listen, just trust me, I need a little adrenaline rush right now and just outside, fresh wind. And we would go for hikes. And then, you know, Matt had a really big group of friends and who loved him a lot as well. And so we would go on hikes or mountain bike rides together as well. This is actually how I met my boyfriend that I live with now in Idaho. Were good friends and we connected on a deeper level throughout the next 2 years. I had a good support system there. And I think one of the things that actually helped me a lot, I realized, is, you know, being able to talk about the hard parts, but then one of the questions that somebody asked me on a river trip that really stuck with me, I think she could tell I was kind of struggling and she was aware. I was just, you know, the place I was at. And she would ask me, well, what's your favorite memory about him? So it was acknowledging the hardship, but also having like a positive thought process around it.
Totally.
And I thought that question was really helpful for that particular instance.
Mm-hmm. You know,
that was helpful.
Yeah. And I would imagine it's helpful for most instances of like, well, for what you said, like it is acknowledging what happened. It's not pretending that it didn't, which my wife hates when I do that. But at the same time, it's like calling you to a positive place. And so it's like, you know, spiritually, chemically, physically, all those like benefits that come from like choosing joy in that scenario are like present. Oh, that's good. That's a good question. Yeah. Yeah. I was going to ask you what advice you had for people who are in the middle of a hard season. It sounds like, you know, even they could ask that question themselves, you know, but is there anything else that you would share with somebody who's in a hard season right now? And it doesn't have to be like they lost somebody really close. It could be something totally different, but they're in it.
Yeah, definitely. I think the general theme of acknowledging your pain and your challenge is important, like starting with that.
Yeah.
Because even if it's like I think I had a hard time where I was like, oh, when I hurt my knee initially, that was the hardest thing I'd ever gone through at the time, was getting knee surgery. And yeah, it was really hard in that moment, like self-identity, like physical pain, not being able to pursue my dream in that amount of time that I wanted. Like that was really hard. And now compared to say losing a loved one, that knee feels like kind of insignificant.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was still significant, but like just the difference. It's relative. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so like, you don't have to compare yourself to other people's challenges. Like your challenge is still a challenge for you, and acknowledging that you're going through that is, I think that's a good thing to do, and just be okay with it. And then, yeah, look for the, you know, to like positive wash, you know, like companies greenwash, saying they're like green, but not actually eco-friendly. You don't have to just be like overboard positive, because you know that's not really everyone's reality, but trying to focus on some of those positive things and move towards that, and look for the, you know, my dad's favorite song is Keep on the Sunny Side. So there's always like a sunny side and a shadow side. The shadow is always going to be there, or will change, you know, depending on where you're at in your life. It'll be bigger. So shadow will be small sometimes, shadow will be big sometimes, but there's always a sunny side. And so trying to like look towards that light and find the bits of joy, like you said, choose.
Yeah.
It's definitely a choice. Like you have to intentionally have a mindset and like change your thought patterns to focus on those good things and have like a sense of direction and take action towards improving the state that you're in.
Right. You know,
I get sad sometimes if I'm just like, man, I haven't gone skiing as much as I want to, or which sounds, maybe that sounds a little bit entitled because I get to ski a lot. So I don't mean to sound like that, but you know,
yeah.
Or like if someone's working on a goal and they're not making the progress that they think they should be, like it's easy to get down in the dumps about stuff from all different levels. But like you got to stand up and start making little bits of progress. And it's okay for those steps to be smaller some days.
Right.
And it's also okay to like give yourself a break and just you know, relax.
If yeah.
it's like, I'm talking quite metaphorically right now, or like take a break, like sit down if you're physically working towards something, but more so like in your emotional state, if you're having a hard time, like it's okay. It will pass. It doesn't feel like it at all times. It feels like you might be stuck, but it will. You will make it through.
Yeah. 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 And that's the one, I hear that one a lot from people of like, it's a season and like, it doesn't feel like it, you know, it feels like this is going to be your new normal forever. And, but like whether you believe it or not, it will end. Like you'll have a new season. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a good perspective for people to hear. When it doesn't feel that way.
Right.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people have been there. It feels like it's not going to end, but it
yeah.
does.
Yeah. Well, before I ask you, I'm just changing the subject kind of, but before I ask you the last question, cause I asked the same last question, but you had said when we were exchanging emails that you have jump ropes. So I have to ask you, like, I've never asked anybody about jump rope in the podcast, but I'm like curious. Do you jump rope a lot?
I jump rope a little bit, but I am like kind of freakishly talented at it. Like I can do all sorts.
Okay, what does that mean?
Yeah, like you know, under the leg tricks, behind the back, like all sorts of crazy maneuvers that I think a normal person would be like, whoa, what is going on? Like, that's not like just jumping.
That's not jumping.
Not crisscross, you know? And so I do have a few jump ropes, but the reason I have that skill set is a little bit random. So in Pinedale, Wyoming, where I grew up, the elementary school had a jump rope team. Like our PE teacher, Mrs. M, she's awesome. She's really into it. And yeah. She had this after school program for kids. I think actually, she required it in our PE classes, but then there was an additional after school like jump rope team.
Yeah.
And she would bring in different people to teach us tricks, and she choreographed routines. And so we had like this fleet of elementary school jump ropers. And during like the high school's halftime for like their basketball games, we would run out and perform jump rope routines where we were all in sync doing different tricks.
Yeah.
And I think my favorite one was to twist and shout. It's pretty weird.
Can you still do it? Like, have you ever tried to break it back out?
Yeah. And so during COVID, before COVID happened, I would still jump rope like for exercise. Not like every week, but every now and then. It was pretty fun because you turn on music and you can do tricks to the rhythm of the music. And I get to go for like 30 minutes at a time and you get some really great cardio in. Yeah. And it's way better than just like, I don't know, riding a stationary bike if I have to be indoors.
Right. Totally.
Yeah. So I still like kept up with it a little bit, but during the COVID lockdown, I was having kind of a downer day and my boyfriend was like, you should go jump rope. Like that always makes you happy. And I don't know if he was being serious or sarcastic, but I was like, you know, you're right. That's such a good idea. and then I like jump roped so much during that. And it really did. It made me really happy. So I'd put on like funny music and make up real routines. We made a whole video jump rope edit.
Your boyfriend?
He videoed.
I thought maybe he was doing it with you.
No, I tried. Because, you know, you can do like partner jump roping.
Yeah.
Like alternate and you kind of share ropes. I tried to get him to do that, but he was not really into it. He did buy a jump rope though. He bought a weighted one. So it was a little more like macho style.
Yeah.
But
teach them.
Yeah. So I did buy jump ropes off of the buyjumpropes.com. I got the long handle. And I try and learn new tricks still.
Wow. I've got, like, do you have an inspiration on social media that like you learn from?
Yeah, totally. I'm amazed by the social media, like the jump ropers who put their videos on social media. There's one girl, her name's Mira Watt or Waite.
In Germany. Do you know
what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
She's amazing. And she's so like peppy and energetic, and she has some tutorials. So I watch her for inspiration.
Okay.
There's another one. I can't remember her name. She's like a world champion.
Is it Tori Boggs?
Yeah. I think
Snorri B or something.
Yes.
That's her.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's really fun. It's such a random skill. Like you don't meet many people who are out doing tricks on their jump rope.
Not on that level anyways.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
Do you do that?
Oh, not that. I'm confident that you're much better than I am at jump rope. I have gotten way better in the last 2 years, but we're creating, spoiler alert, we're creating like a 90-day program for people that are getting started with jump rope. And I'm like the instructor for the first 2 months, but that's about as far as I can take people. So it's like, I can do the other things in month three, but not very aesthetically pleasing. So we're going to have somebody else do them. But
I bet in 3 months you could do all of the other tricks too.
Yeah. So the things in month three are like the Mick release or the under the leg kind of stuff. And it's like, I can do that, but you don't want to learn from somebody who does it the way I do.
I see.
It.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, So I'm getting there, but yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. I don't think I could describe how to do, or nor even know the names of how to do like under the leg jump and twist things.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, the names are random.
Yeah. Like Toad. Something.
Toad and Awesome Annie and Caboose. Yeah. And we have this fun social media idea of like going out on the streets and giving someone a jump rope and then telling them to do a trick, but just tell them the name.
And they don't just make up what they think.
And just see what they think it is. Because they make no sense. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, we'll probably do that. Anyways, tangent. That was a tangent.
That was a tangent. But jump roping, I found that teaching myself new tricks with a jump rope is inspiring me to want to go and learn new tricks on skis.
What?
Because I don't know why, I haven't like pushed myself to really learn too many new tricks on skis.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, I don't want to like hurt my knees again or something.
Yeah.
So I stick to like my same few moves. But jump roping, I want to learn new tricks. And I like when you're trying a new trick with a jump rope, you know, it like smacks you in the face
Oh,
and hits
yeah.
you on the toe. Like you rarely get it on the first try. And it takes a lot
Right.
of repetition over and over and over to like figure it out. And so, yeah, by doing that in the last few years, it's really inspired me to want to learn new ski tricks.
I love
So
to
there
hear
you go.
that. I was going to ask you if there's any training crossover for like the skiing or the, any of the backpacking mountaineering type stuff, with jump rope, or if it's just a good cardio workout. Like if you've seen any benefit to like, rather than inspiring you to try new tricks, but like actually helping you with what you're trying to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it does. Like hand-eye coordination
Yeah.
and learning to do things second nature. Like once you've done enough repetition with a jump rope trick, your body will just do it. Like you don't have to think, okay,
Right.
right arm under here and left. You know, once you've done it enough, at
Right.
first, you got to do a lot of thinking, but you're way better when you stop thinking about it, once
Totally.
you get to that point. So yeah, hand-eye coordination I think is great. Like I do some of those 360s with the jump rope, and that's good for, you know, realizing I can do a 360 just standing. If I have air time on my skis, I can definitely do a 360. So like
Right.
mentally realizing like that translates. And yeah, just
Yeah.
like foot movements. I think the more tactful you are with your feet while you're jump roping, it translates to say ski mountaineering where you're climbing up mountain faces with like slippery rocks and knife edge bridges. So just the overall like physical
Yeah.
capability in on top of the cardio is really good. And
Right.
like it like fine tunes all your small muscles, you know.
So interesting. I love hearing how people apply it to like so many different use cases. Okay, we got a tangent.
Okay.
So my last question, to kind of tie a bow on our conversation, specifically around the do hard things, is like you go through hard things, it's part of life. And theoretically, like people who recognize that hard things are valuable are also oftentimes like finding themselves in the middle of them off because they want to grow. And so the question is, what's a hard thing you're in the middle of right now?
Oh man. Oh, that is hard.
This question, Dan, this is the hard thing I'm in the
This
middle
is
of.
hard. There's a few things. I'm not sure I'm ready to share a few that are coming to mind right now. So I'm still like my brain's spinning thinking of another one.
Option D.
Oh,
Yeah.
option F. Here we go.
Oh, okay.
I'm kidding. A
That's fine
hard
though.
thing that I'm going through right now. Okay, this might be, well, we talked about some deep stuff already, so if this one feels a little less deep, that's okay. But
Yeah.
I am struggling with trying to fine-tune my career path right now, where, you know, when I was first getting started as a skier, as an athlete, and then also doing freelance, like media content creation, I had to hustle really hard. Like always put yourself out there, do a lot of free work, or I thought I needed to do some free work in order to get the future opportunities or prove myself. So I was like, go, 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 always trying to do a lot of different things at once, to make ends meet, using that as like my income source. And then as I've got to this point in my career now, I feel really lucky to say that I've gotten pretty established in a lot of those different career paths that I have. So I have a lot of opportunity, and now I need to realize like I need to shrink it down, and I'm trying to figure out my focus of what direction I want to focus right now. Where I've worked so hard building these other career paths of, say, working with the Avalanche Center as the media person, writing for freelance magazines, teaching avalanche courses, backpack guiding, like all of those different things, so that I could afford to continue pursuing a ski career because I wanted to be in the ski films. Now
Yeah.
that I've made it into the ski films, I have these other careers that are pretty robust and built out. So currently I'm in this spot where I'm like, do I like keep these other things going and do my, you know, athlete focused career, or do I like mainly focus on that one goal and then I can come back to these other things?
Yeah.
So hopefully that makes sense, because I am in the middle of figuring it out in my brain. So
yeah,
I sound a little like rambly. But yeah,
it made
like
sense.
Finding yeah. that direction, I think has been a challenge that's like present right now for me.
Totally. And are you feeling like you have to make a decision, imminent, or do you, because some of those like things that you've built up are going to come calling in like the off season of skiing, and you got to like either let them sink or swim, or like, is it, you have a runway to kind of make a decision for a couple of years?
Yeah. I think my initial thought is that I can just do a little bit less of these other things and then have more time to focus on my main goals. It's like mm-hmm. that saying, energy flows where your attention goes.
I haven't heard that, but it makes sense.
Yeah. Wherever you focus your attention is where like the energy will go. And then it also ties into manifestation. And yeah, so like, so that goes back to the advice for people going through a hard time, focusing on what you want your life to become.
Mm-hmm.
It might not seem like it's happening yet, but that attention will then put all of the energy and, you know, from the universe, and it sounds hokey, but it's also really true. It really does work. So using that for like overcoming a hardship, that idea, but then also for me right now of, I need to put my attention towards what I want to grow. And
yeah,
over the last couple of years, I've had like so many different things going on that it spread my attention pretty thin.
Yep.
Each one of them is only getting a little bit of attention, so I feel like they're only growing a little bit. Yes. So
yeah, it's hard to say no to stuff.
It's so hard to say no, especially when you've had to say yes for so long just to make ends meet, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, well, and you probably love the things that you've built and the things that you're pursuing. And so it's like, you know, in the back of your mind, when you say no to something or let it go, it's like, will it ever like, well, but I don't want to lose it for good, you know? And, or you can justify in your mind why it's worth keeping. Like, you know, in my job currently, you know, there's so many things I could be doing that are good things, but it's like, what do I say no to? Like, what is the best thing for me to do? And like that saying no feels like a letting go. Like it's kind of hard. And I think it sounds like that's exactly where you're at, because you love all the things that you are doing. I mean, it seems like it the way you describe them. So
yeah, I do really enjoy
yeah.
all of them, and most parts of all of them. There's most like the mundane stuff. You're like, oh, man, do I really have to do that?
Totally. Yeah. There's no perfect job, I guess.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, for people that are like, man, I want to know more, or she's really inspiring, I'm just going to follow her, like, how can people keep up with you?
Yeah, you can follow me on, the best place right now is on Instagram. It's Amy Jane David. It's pretty simple. Three first
yep.
name.
Yep. Got it.
Amy Jane David. And I'm a pretty open person, so I share a lot of stuff on Instagram. I've been joking recently saying I'm an oversharer, but I think it's nice to be able to share things.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, that's probably what people are going to want to follow you for after the podcast. So that works out great. Okay, cool. So I'll put that in the show notes for people, and they can ask their questions or just keep up with what you're doing and figure out what you're going to do in the next season of life. What's she going to let go of? Maybe they're on their edge of their seat waiting to find out. But I'm really thankful that you hopped on, and thanks for being willing to share, and I'm confident it'll be an encouragement for people.
Cool. Well, yeah, thank you so much for inviting me to be on the podcast and
creating
space to have more open, vulnerable conversations.
Totally.
Yes, I appreciate it a lot. And I look forward to listening to your other episodes as well.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Amy. Thanks for listening to the Do Hard Things podcast by Elite SRS. We hope you are encouraged today and have a newfound hope to persevere. Be sure to subscribe for more great episodes and conversations. And if you ever want to watch an episode, check out our YouTube channel at www.youtube.com/elitesrs. Have a blessed day.